Your relationship with your body is the longest relationship you will ever be in. You must have unconditional permission to eat in order to make peace with food. What is your self-talk like about your body? If you wouldn't say that to a loved one about their body, what makes it okay to say it to yourself? This is a safe virtual space where we are going to dig into deep heart-to-heart combos that all come back to our relationships with food and body. Welcome back to another episode of the Fine Food Freedom Podcast. This is your host, Sam Previtt, and I am so excited that you're here. I'm also excited if you pressed play on this episode. Chances are you either watched the Biggest Loser documentary already, or you might be similar to me, where surprisingly enough, I chose not to watch it. You might say, how are you doing a podcast on it if you didn't watch it? Well, I'm lucky enough today to be joined by two psychologists, Alana and Kayla, which you can find their links in the show notes to their individual practices. And they shot me an email and they're like, look, Sam, we watched it. It's extremely problematic. We've been dissecting it. We want to talk about it. And I was like, this is perfect because I don't want to watch it, but I still want to talk about it. And so I find that there's a lot of clients that were like, I couldn't watch it. Like, I knew it would be too triggering. So this might be a great way for us to validate for you that yes, it is triggering and here's why. I also, in the show notes, you're going to see that I linked the Shoulders Down podcast, which is a podcast that's hosted by Leah Kern, a dietitian that I've worked with previously. She is brilliant. And she did her own breakdown of what she liked and what she didn't like about the documentary. So I'm putting that in there just in case after you listen to today's episode, if you're like, wait, I need more. I want to hear more. Leah did a wonderful breakdown as well. So today we get into all sorts of things. I talk, of course, why I chose not to watch it, but yet still host a podcast on it. We talk about the staff, you know, and the producers on The Biggest Loser and how a lot of them unfortunately doubled down on the documentary. We talked about the stereotypes that they really try to portray on the show and how problematic that is. Then we kind of break down the different contestants and how they share their experience with the show. And there's some very vastly different experiences that they highlight. And we also talk about the incredible Aubrey Gordon. If you don't already know her, follow her. She's linked in the show notes below. She's incredible. And she was featured in this documentary. So if nothing else came good out of it, it's that Aubrey Gordon had the spotlight on her because her work and her as a human, she's incredible. So I want to say a special thank you to both Alana and Kayla for reaching out and prompting me to create this episode, to having a conversation with me, to watching the documentary so I can ask you questions on it. And so without further ado, let's get into today's episode with Alana and Kayla breaking down the Biggest Loser documentary. Okay, so I am super excited for this conversation today for many reasons. One, because I selfishly, we can call it selfish, but we can also call it protecting the peace, didn't want to watch the Biggest Loser documentary that came out on Netflix. And I was so lucky that both Alana and Kayla just slid into my inbox and were like, hey, would you want to do a podcast on this? And I was like, actually, yes, I would love to do a podcast, but no, I don't want to watch it. And so I put a poll on my Instagram story that I was like downloading some shows for a flight. And I was like, should I watch this? And it was probably the most conclusive poll I've ever done where people were like, yes, we want to know. And I was like, oh, well, but I don't want to. And I was gonna watch it. But then I was like on this plane and I was like, I just want to unplug and watch something that's not going to trigger me. And the main thing I kept hearing from people in our online community, from our clients, from our providers was that if you grew up in the Biggest Loser era, which we all did, it can be very, very triggering. So to set the scene before we jump in, The Biggest Loser had 18 seasons between 2004 to 2016. I didn't know this, but they came back for a 19th season in 2020. Didn't know that until today.
Didn't know that.
Right? I'm like, oh, we were all happening TikTok and COVID and all the things.
Yeah.
But for Biggest Loser contestants, whoever lost the highest percentage of body weight won the prize of $250,000 per, you know, season. And so this was very problematic for many different reasons that we'll get into today. But this documentary came out, and as providers, I think a lot of us were excited that, like, oh, this is going to expose how horrendous and harmful the show is. And it did in some ways, and it didn't in others. So can't wait to talk about that today. But I want to preface today's conversation for our listeners one more time to say I did not watch it. And that was something I was talking to Alana about before we press record, of the reason why for me was because I was like, I feel like this is just going to trigger me. And I don't want to be triggered right now. And as I'm sure you guys know, with the work that you do, sometimes you just want to remove yourself from the work world when you're relaxing. And that just didn't feel relaxing to watch. But it is equally important to be in the know about it, because our clients are watching it, right? People are watching it and people are getting triggered by it, and it's bringing up a lot. So thank you for reaching out to me, to asking to have this conversation. I'm so excited to have you on this platform today. So however you want to start, let's get into it, whether you want to start with the most harmful or the most helpful things about the documentary. I'm going to hand it over to you guys and see where you want to start.
That's such a great question. First of all, thank you again for having us on, because I feel like having just watched it and then just having to sit with watching it and like unpacking it with whoever would listen, if I at least like, if I'm going to do something triggering, let me at least like unpack why. So I'm grateful to have this space to talk about it, because I think that, like you noted, seeing it and seeing it trending as like one of the top things on Netflix got me, as an eating disorder therapist, initially excited, because I was like, I remember seeing this as a kid, which we could unpack all day why I shouldn't have been watching that as a kid. But like, I remember seeing this, and maybe they're finally exposing how harmful the show was and really talking about these big issues like fat phobia and weight stigma, in a productive manner. And they like really not even scratch the surface on some of that, truthfully. So I don't know, Caleb, if you have any thoughts about like starting with like most harmful versus like at least a glimmer of positive, if we can call it that.
Right. Yeah. Also want to say, Sam, thank you for having us. I think this is such an important topic. I actually never watched the show. Like, I never watched Biggest Loser growing up. No regrets about that. But when the documentary came out, I was like, okay, I want to see what this is all about. And Alana can attest, I kept having to pause and send voice notes to friends being like, what is this? Just so problematic, so upsetting. I kept being like, should I even finish it? And it was one of those things of like, it's so bad, I can't look away. It's kind of how I was feeling.
Yeah.
I think that I thought the most harmful thing that kept coming up was just how they were really, the producers of the show, the hosts of the show, they were really trying to reinforce these stereotypes about people that are in bigger bodies of like, you know, they're lazy, they can't resist temptation, they're not hardworking, all of these things through these horrific challenges of like, there was one challenge that I feel like I can't get it out of my head because it was so awful, of let's put all their favorite foods in front of them, all the bad foods, also really leaning into this whole idea of good food and bad food and fat people only eat bad food, and just, so let's put all their favorite foods in front of them and let's watch them be unable to resist temptation. Keeping in mind, first of all, the whole idea of temptation, so problematic, but also keeping in mind, they were putting them in front of foods after actively starving them, over encouraging them to over exercise, and just really glorifying this idea of fat people can't resist this temptation, you know, this whole idea of weak, unable to achieve long-term goals. I thought that that part was just especially horrific to watch.
That's, yeah. Oh, just you saying that, I feel like my blood pressure is going up while I'm listening to you, like thinking about that. Cause I did watch it as a child. I remember, and me and my providers like talked about it as this was coming out, because a lot of us did. Like, I remember I was extremely raised in diet culture, as a lot of us were. And I remember watching the show and being like, that is so motivating. Like that, like I could cringe so hard, right? Oh, like, but again, cringe means growth. But I remember like, I remember thinking like, oh, Jillian Michaels is so fit. And now I'm like, oh my God, Jesus Christ. I don't even want to say her name. But so I want to hear about the documentary specifically with these trainers, because I saw clips on social that some of them seem to just double down and basically be like, basically like, we agree with what we were doing and we still think fat people are unhealthy. So is that what was said? Were there any trainers or staff on the show that has like learned, grown, or evolved? Or is everyone in the show that was associated with the show still thinking in that very weight-centric, fat-phobic way?
So more so the latter, unsurprisingly in ways, but I think like really disappointing to see. They had both producers, I'm forgetting his name, the male trainer.
And then blonde one, Bob, right? Bob, yes.
Bob. And Jillian Michaels at the end of it, where they're like, she refused to comment or be on this, which like, fair enough, she wouldn't necessarily say anything particularly.
I was going to say, we know what she would have said.
Yeah, exactly. And they also had, and I don't remember the doctor being like part of the show, but maybe he was. And I just like, that didn't stick in my mind as a kid, that they had like a supervising doctor. And he was probably the one calling out the harmful things the most, where he's like, the trainers would push them. And like, trigger warning, I'm going to say some specific numbers that are very eating disordered. Mm-hmm. He's like, the trainers would push them to eat like 800, 900 calories a day and be working out for 8 to 9 hours. And, you know, I was saying that's like way too low of a caloric deficit. They should have been eating 1200. And I'm like, that's still like 1200 for women and 1800 for men. And I'm like, they're working out for 8 hours. That's still, if you weren't even like such a crazy deficit, we now know that like if you're anywhere in like an iota of informed nutrition science, like it just feels like they're still in that, the doctor who was like the most like, yeah, it was problematic and they went too far. This is the bar I kept trying to hold. I was like, that's still like a deeply problematic bar.
Yes, because for our listeners, 1,200 calories a day is the nutritional needs of a 2-year-old. So if you are an adult working out for 8 hours a day, boy, oh boy, do you need more than 1,200. And yeah, even if you're not working out all day, boy, oh boy, do you need more than 1,200 calories a day?
Yeah, literally. And that's like someone, if that's what, and people don't know that, let's say like mass majority are watching this, and here's the doctor who's like the voice of reason still promoting this like diet cultured information and saying how they went too far by pushing it further than that. And I'm like, that's still an issue. And then the producers, one in particular, like doubled down on like, tell me any other reality TV show that's ever helped turn people's lives around. So like really leaning into this concept of like, we were helping people, even though like a big piece of the documentary was former contestants coming on and being like, I gained the weight back, if not more. I'm still really struggling. Like, I question all of this and all these different ways of like, how was it helpful? All these ways that I think it was harmful. And here the producers and these different trainers are like, well, you know, that's like a them problem. It's not substantiated that like these people who did gain the weight back, that's on us. Like it happened after the show. So it was still this like,
it's like diet culture 101, right? It's like, no. The diet didn't fail you. You failed. You're the failure. That's what it tells us. Even though we know that gaining the weight back and then more is conclusive with the evidence that that happens for the majority of humans, that diet, and especially something that extreme.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it seemed like everyone, producers, trainers, so Bob in this case, like really doubled down. I think the word healthier was thrown around a lot. I was really cringing every time that word was thrown out because people are just talking about the horrific physical and mental health effects that being on the show had on their lives, even carrying into the long term. And just really saying, I think Bob would look at some clips of himself that were particularly outrageous, and he'd be like, maybe I didn't handle that the best way I could have. And I mean, it was kind of horrifying to see such a minimal reaction he had to that. And I think behind his reaction was still, but I was helping people get healthier. That was the goal of this show. So I have no regrets.
No regrets. That is, that is really, really hard. I'm sure that was really hard to watch. Mm-hmm. So I would love to hear then, because I had heard from colleagues that Aubrey Gordon was a part of the show. For those listening, I'll link her Instagram in the show notes. Her Instagram is your YR fat friend. And Aubrey Gordon, if you don't know her, is an author, podcaster, advocate. She writes all about fatness, fat acceptance, anti-fat bias. She's also the host of the incredible podcast Maintenance Phase. So when I heard she was a part of it, I was like, oh, it's gotta be great. Like, that's awesome. And then I heard that she wasn't, there wasn't much in there from her. And I can only imagine they probably got so much great content from her that was pared down. So how did they utilize Aubrey in this documentary? How did they kind of question her? What was she coming on to talk about?
Yeah. If Aubrey listens to this, big fan, love Aubrey. the clips they used of her were like the few moments I was like snapping my fingers. Like, I'm like, yes.
This is it. Cause what we need.
Exactly. Like, she was there kind of speaking to, like, they played this clip and she was showing how like the show was curated in this way to lean into these awful like tropes of fat folks and how it kind of plays into the whole narrative and amplifies it by them being like, oh, so grateful to be there and be treated this way and like be put into these like situations where behind the scenes, again, it's all curated to make it look a certain way, like someone's being lazy, but they're working out a crazy amount, or someone's being unmotivated, you know, like all these different narratives or the temptations that Kayla was talking about, how they were like forced to go and do that. It wasn't like a choice and was really doing a lovely job of like really amplifying how in the diet culture era, how this just really in her world, like new people watching it and like themselves thinking like, I need to go sign myself up. I think she said like one of her roommates at the time signed herself up for like that camp because this show was like instilling these concepts of like, you were the problem. And what's tricky and frustrating about it was like, I mean, in the total of, I don't even know how, there's three episodes, each an hour long, I think, or something like that. There's probably like a handful of clips from her speaking mm-hmm. to this. And they were like, she was making these great points. And then they were just kind of like clipped and curated and on to the next person justifying all of it in a way that I like am confident there's more she mm-hmm. said and more that she like got into that they were just like too deep.
Too radical, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking the same thing, that I would love to see the unedited version where she probably has a lot more to say. Yeah, it seemed like she would say something and I would be really like, thank you, like say more. And then it would cut to someone else, just kind of undermining what she was saying. So, and I think that that was very intentional, right? Of like, okay, yeah, that's a good point, but we still were helping people get healthier and this show made so much money, and just bringing it back to, this is why the show was good for America and essentially for the world. Cause they said that, they then expanded to Biggest Loser across like many other countries. Mm.
So unfortunate. And I can imagine, yeah, she was probably pitched like, come on and share your thoughts on it. And they had it there to like provide another perspective. But then, like you said, quickly follow up with, okay, sure. Yeah, there's one perspective, but here's why we're right. So as a team of dietitians who supports people with eating disorders and intuitive eating, this, you know, this documentary has really brought up a lot. It's stirred up a lot in our clients. And so I can imagine as therapists, as psychologists, as people, you know, who support people with mental illness related to eating disorder, disordered eating, body image. How are you guys navigating these conversations with your clients or with the people that you support? Have you seen this bring stuff up in them? Is it something you're talking about? Because I feel like it has been such a cultural moment where this has been, I don't know if it's still number one on Netflix, but I feel like it's still definitely like top 10 now for weeks and weeks. So how are you seeing this kind of impact your clients?
I think what's tricky, and we didn't get to it quite yet, is it felt like the tail end of it was like a pitch for GLP-1s in a certain way, which was also very challenging.
Oh yeah. Tell me more about that.
So there was a couple of folks on there who were on The Biggest Loser and talked about how like it was harmful and they gained weight and it was abusive, et cetera, et cetera. Of course, there was the other side, like condoning their behaviors and mm-hmm. so on. But then a handful of those folks go on towards the end to talk about how like GLP-1s are like turning their lives around and being really helpful and helping them in ways the show never did. So I think at least in the clinical work with my clients, it's really been unpacking like how that the GLP-1 era has been impacting a lot of folks in their eating disorder recovery journey, or like trying to exist in a larger body and come to peace with that when there's this huge cultural swing with the GLP-1s in the mix. And I think in ways then when they were able to get like revved up by the documentary and be like, see, like my lived experience that we unpack, like here's it. So catching everyone's like eye and like everyone's interest, and that's really impacting that experience. And then that added layer of frustration of like, and here's again, like this pitch for this thing that could help when like I'm still grappling with like existing as I am and coming to a place of acceptance and neutrality around that. Or I mean, there's some folks who are still grieving. I would say like the bodies they're living in and navigating that, and then having this in their face be like, see, it's like not just in my head, which of course it never is. We have to always take the societal into context, but I think it just felt so blatantly in their face and like upsetting and infuriating.
Yeah, similar messages have come up in my work. I think a consistent theme that comes up a lot for patients that bring up the documentary is, you know, I used to watch this show. I didn't think anything was bad. Not only that, but I thought it was motivating. I thought it was this good thing. And just kind of going into like, why did I think that? Like, what made me think that? And then thinking about all the other factors in their lives that were so consistent with the ideas of good and bad foods, villainizing food, weight being as simple as calories in, calories out. So I think for a lot of patients, it almost like awakened previous resentments that they've had. So helping them to process that and just realizing how far they've come in not aligning with those beliefs anymore, I think has been a big part. So I think just that anger that people are feeling from watching the documentary and realizing like, this affected my life more than I thought. This is something that like I was 12 or 14 years old and watching this every single week and looking forward to it. And what are the implications of that? I'm definitely seeing that coming up more in therapy.
Yeah. Thank you both for those different perspectives. And I like how you both answered it so differently, and both are so important, but how cool, like you said, Kayla, that people can watch that and be like, holy shit. Like I used to think that was healthy. Cause that was kind of my reaction, even though I didn't watch it. Like I just started reflecting on The Biggest Loser as it now being talked about. And I remember being like, what a dream it would be to work on that show one day. Like, holy shit. Hello. Now look what I do, right? Like couldn't be more polar opposite. So I think it does create those opportunities to be like, wow, look how far I've come in my recovery and challenging my belief systems and all of those things. And I had no idea that, Alana, thank you for bringing that up, that it touched on GLP-1s, but that makes so much sense because, and I want to be very clear and intentional for our listeners that, you know, we have people that listen that take GLP-1s, right? We have people that are considering GLP-1s, and this is not to shame or, you know, guilt anyone for medications that they're taking or considering taking. And it also makes so much sense that these people that would have gone through this collective trauma of being on this show, like being paid to lose weight or motivated to win money to lose weight, that it is so deeply ingrained with them that like a smaller body is a better body, is a healthier body. And they now have this medication that they're saying, okay, the show didn't get it for me, right? It didn't work. It didn't, because of course it didn't, because that type of extreme weight loss is not sustainable, but here's this drug that will help me do that. But that's, wow, how problematic I can imagine that is and was to see it shift from like The Biggest Loser, like thinking it was like, oh, it's just going to cover this documentary, but then this is now a part of the contestant's journey. So now it's going to loop in 2025 diet culture.
Yeah. And in a way too, to your point where like GLP-1s is a nuanced conversation. Definitely. It's not to shame or judge any individual who's choosing to take that for various health reasons, but it was talked about in such a casual and unsurprising lack of nuanced way where, again, it felt like a frustrating, like added piece of like, here's this problematic thing that didn't work, but here's something else that could work. And I'm like, again, it's like not giving.
Here's
like
what changed my life. Yeah. Here's what changed my life. Here's what made it better, period. We hear that a lot. We hear that narrative a lot around those medications. So is there anything that as you both kind of came to this conversation today, you know, ready to talk about this documentary and all of the nuance behind it, is there anything we've missed or is there anything that you're thinking about or, you know, that you want to make sure we get across as well?
Yeah. Kayla, I want to kind of give a shout out to you because it was in one of your voice notes to me that like really made me think about it more, was like beyond just like the weight stigma and fat phobia, like the racism and sexism and just like these added isms that were like really amplified in a way where it felt very predatory. And again, like instead of owning it, they kind of like cast it as like, well, that contestant was really like all over the place. And that's why she was a good one to pick because she was so whatever versus like her being like they cast me as the angry black woman, right? Like they intentionally would then push me into scenarios where I would react that way or like all these different. Yeah, that's just like one great example that I think, Kayla, I want to give you credit and wanted to touch upon because it was like horrifying and not surprising, but again, like so horrifying to see them like try to rationalize beyond just the weight stigma of it all.
Definitely. It was, it really seemed like the producers of this show were going into each episode thinking, what are the stereotypes that we can affirm? What are the stereotypes that we can show are true to make this person look lazy or mean or angry, any of those things? So it was like there was already this fat phobia, this bias that every single contestant was being subject to. But on top of that, it was like, let's look at the other factors of their identity that we can also villainize or that we can also show our audience. That person is, wow, that person isn't just fat, they're also X, Y, and Z, and that's why they're not going to win our competition. So that was, I think that layer of this is also something that went completely unnoticed for people that watched the show years and years ago. So I was glad that they highlighted that. Also something that I think they could have done much more extensively. But I think that was, I remember when I sent Alana that voice note, I was thinking they could make an entire documentary just about that, just about the, you know, racism and sexism and all of these other biases inherent in the show.
Wow. I had no idea that they touched on those things. So thank you so much for bringing that up. And, you know, what a perfect is the perfect intersection of, you know, how diet culture is rooted in racism. And I always love to throw out Fearing the Black Body by Sabrina Strings, an incredible book that really covers that as well, because I'm sure that is definitely interwoven into the show in many different ways. Is there anything for you, Kayla? Because I know Alana had, you know, touched on that, and that's something you guys voice memoed about, but was there anything that you, separate from that, were thinking of that you wanted to add to this conversation?
I think just, you know, it's such a basic concept, but I think something that was said in the both the trailer for the documentary and in the show itself is just, you can't have a weight loss competition that's healthy. Like, it's just not possible. It cannot be done. So just thinking of how not only was this not safe, but it was dangerous. Like, if you think of all of the medical risks that they took for everyone on this show, all of the things that were presented as worthwhile to be skinny, to be smaller, I think that resonated with me as a psychologist, of just thinking for a lot of people, it feels like anything is worthwhile to be smaller, anything is worthwhile to be skinny. And I think that that is such a powerful thing, and it's hard to chip away at. And I think that was really the forefront of this show. That was at the core of it, was anything is worth it to make yourself smaller, to take up less space. So I think that's something that, even in the first few minutes, I think, of the documentary, when they said that, I was like, that is a really basic but powerful statement. Just that there is no world or situation in which a weight loss competition can be healthy.
Mm, so powerful. And I hope that the show never makes it back onto TV in any way, shape, or form. But because of how much publicity, though, this documentary is stirring up, I wonder if there's like some talks of like, how do we recreate it in a way? And I hope that does not happen.
Yeah, I echo that sentiment.
Me too. I've seen a lot of, on my TikTok, a lot of former contestants coming forward and sharing their experiences. And that fear has been echoed by a few of them, of just like, I hope that, as terrible as this documentary is, there is a fear that it's going to glamorize this in some way, and there's going to be a desire to recreate it. And I think collectively we all hope that does not happen. So, so dangerous, so unhealthy.
Yeah. So as we close out today, as people are listening and maybe they didn't watch it like me, and they're like, you know what, I didn't watch it, but let me just listen to this conversation because I want to, you know, be in the know. Or maybe they did watch it and it brought up a lot for them. What words of hope, and just maybe words of strength or words of wisdom, however you want to say it, do you both want to leave our listeners with today?
That's a great question, or like great concept to even leave off on. I think on my end, just like continuing to encourage people to recognize that like their journey to figure out what's best for them, and kind of like call out the noise for the noise. And if something sounds too good to be true, or if anything is so contentious, these are good like flags to be able to like lean into your individual supports, your own journey of like your relationship with your holistic health, your mental health, your physical health, et cetera, in ways that are nuanced, because we deserve that as individuals, to have nuanced, thoughtful relationships with ourselves. And it's like the only relationship you have your entire life is the one with yourself. So to really lean into that, whether it's protecting your peace and not watching things like this, or continuing to like use support to unpack how it, all the cultural pieces of moments like things like this and everything else we're hearing and seeing is leaving people feeling.
Very well said, Alana. It's hard to follow up, but I think just that in this process of, you know, challenging these really toxic beliefs that contribute to things like fat phobia, diet culture, I think just something that this documentary really illustrated to me was that there's so much unlearning learning that is involved in that process before you can get to any new learning. So if you're feeling like the new learning isn't really clicking, if you're feeling like I am not there yet, maybe backtrack. What are the things that you hold to be true that need to be unlearned before you can approach that new learning?
I love that, because I think when we're walking away from diet culture, people think it's like, oh, okay, I'm just like not going to diet anymore. But when this has been ingrained in us for 5, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years of like smaller is better, smaller is healthier, all of these very toxic messages, it is so, so hard to walk away from that. And that doesn't even mean, like you said, starting the learning or the moving forward or the new belief systems, just to not subscribe to that anymore is huge. So for anyone that's listening that's even questioning those belief systems, I hope you're giving yourself credit, because it is extremely, extremely hard work. Well, I thank you both, Alana and Kayla, for being here today, for creating this conversation and bringing it to light, because I know so many people are looking to have, you know, these nuanced conversations and to learn more. So for those listening, where can they best find you? Whoever wants to go first.
Kayla, you want to go? You had a little eyebrow raise.
So I am in New York City. I work at Upper East Side Psychology. And my social media profiles are pretty private, so can't really find me there, but can be found on LinkedIn or on the Upper East Side Psychology website.
Awesome.
Yeah, and you can find me. I'm in Philadelphia, and I work at Wildflower Therapy. My socials are also private, but that being said, the head of the practice, Dr. Colleen Reichman, has a really great social media page that represents her work and the practice's work that I highly encourage people to check out, because it's just like some of the content's funny but also like very deep, so helpful even in line with all of this. But similarly on LinkedIn, through the practice page, anyone is welcome to reach out to connect.
Awesome. I will link both of those websites for both of you in the show notes. And yes, I want to echo, Dr. Colleen is incredible. I love everything that she does. She is so brilliant in so many ways. So happy that we have her to connect all of us. And just thank you again for both of you for being here.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Find Food Freedom Podcast. Every single time you listen to an episode, it truly makes our dreams come true, helping people make peace with food, body, and movement. If you have not already, please make sure to head over to social media and give us a follow at find.food.freedom on Instagram or Find Food Freedom on TikTok. And if you resonated with today's episode and want more professional support, please head over to findfoodfreedomresources.com. This is where you can get your benefits checked to see if your health insurance will fully cover that one-on-one nutrition counseling with our team. And we also have so many other virtual resources there. So again, that's findfoodfreedomresources.com for all things Find Food Freedom and to get those health insurance benefits checked. If you have not already, I invite you to rate, review, subscribe, like, share this podcast with anybody that you think needs to hear it. The more that you share this podcast, the more that this message of intuitive eating and food freedom will be out in the world, which we so desperately need. Again, thank you for being here. I cannot wait to chat with you again soon on the next episode of the Find Food Freedom Podcast.